Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and welcome. Today we are speaking with Reverend Dr. Boise Kimber. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so very much for the invite, and you and I have not seen each other in a little bit, and so I'm grateful and thankful to be present with you today.
Let's start off with your upbringing. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and...
So I grew up in a little small town called Phenix City, Alabama. And I was born in a little town called Salem, where my big mama raised me up until around the fourth grade. And then my mother and my father bought a house in Phenix City, Alabama, where I... grew up finishing elementary school, junior high school, and high school there.
Hmm. Tell me a little bit about your mother. What kind of mom was she?
Man, my mother was a great singer. She was one of the lead singers of the choir back in the day in her time. My daddy was... one of the deacons at the church. My mother worked at Edgewood Elementary School in the cafeteria. My father worked at this company called Uniroar Tire Company, and he had his own business, Kimber Appliance Company, where he fixed refrigerators, washing machines, air conditions. And he went to school for that. Hmm. And so my dad was a great guy too, hardworking man.
What ethic do you get from your mom or teaching that you carry with you each and every day?
So my mother was a lot liberal with us. She loved us and she would certainly follow us to our games and school. And my father has always been a conservative guy, worked hard, went to work every day, went to church every Sunday, loved people. And so I came from this loving two-family household. I didn't know what it meant to be raised by a single parent. Both of my parents raised us.
And what kind of foundation did that provide you? Having
well, it provided a solid foundation. Whereas what I'm doing now, what I've done in the past, I have to thank my mother and father for the upbringing and for the challenges that they put in front of us.
You say challenges. You say your father was conservative. Was it a very strict household? Were there rules and regulations you had to follow?
Wasn't a strict household, but you knew when they meant business. You went to school every day. You did your homework. You did your chores. Man, I promised that when I left my parents' house, I would wash no more dishes the rest of my life. That was part of my chore. My sister had a week of washing dishes. I had a week of washing dishes. We had a wood stove, and we would cut wood until my father decided that he was going to order the wood from now on. And so we ate dinner together each evening because my father usually was home by 5 o'clock in the evening from Uniroyal.
You had chores in the house, responsibilities, a lot of them. So early on, you already had a good foundation of discipline, right and wrong in the church. How was Sunday service for you?
Sunday service was awesome, man. So my pastor, who is still living at 90 years old and still pastoring the same church, man, this guy was awesome. I mean, he was a great orator, one of the greatest singers that you could ever come in contact with. And I still remember you couldn't even get into the church. The church was packed every Sunday from the sanctuary all the way to the fellowship hall and people sitting out in the hallway. They built a new church probably 20 years ago, and they paid for it. I mean, this is a church that seats about 2,000 people, state of the art.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your father was a hard worker, and I can see that in the way you carry yourself. How was it having that example in your life of a black man doing his thing and taking care of business?
Oh, man. I think about my father every day because my father was disciplined, and that made me become a disciplined person and made me chart the course in which I wanted to do. And so he was a living example for me as one of his sons. So when my father entrusted all of his belongings and everything to me when he got sick. And so I would fly down from New Haven to Alabama once a week and stay several days and to take care of my father and to make sure that he was being taken care of. And the last time that I was there with my father, the doctor came in, and my dad was in St. Francis Hospital. The doctor came in, and he said to me that I have done all I can for your father. There's nothing else that we can do. My father had heart congestion. And so the doctor said that we need to put your dad in hospice. So I go in and I said that the doctor has said that they could, they've done everything they could for you. He said, okay. I said, what they want to do now, Daddy, is to have you to go to hospice. And my father said to me, is it a good place? Is it a nice place? Is it what I've been used to living? I said, oh, yeah, Dad. You ain't got to worry about that. That's going to be a nice place. So that was on a Friday. And so I carried him to hospice on a Saturday morning. And then I flew back to Connecticut. I talked to my dad on Saturday night, you know, good spirit. Talked to him on Sunday. He said, yeah, people are coming over to see me. I'm excited. And I talked to my dad Monday. My father's voice had gone down. I knew he was transitioning then. And then I talked to him on Tuesday morning. And he said to me, make sure you take care of everything. And then around noontime, my father had passed. So when he passed, I waited a couple of days before I went to make the arrangement. But the arrangement I had already made from here. And so my father had a good life, a profitable life. He was an entrepreneur also. And so, and he was a Christian man. And my mother was a Christian woman. And so when I look today and I see single parent mothers and even some single parent fathers, I was not in that category. And I thank God that I was not in that category.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Canelario, and we're listening to the words of Reverend Dr. Boise Kimber. young man from Alabama, growing up in a segregated South, I assume, because you're not a young, fried chick anymore.
Yeah, segregated South. It was George Wallace was the governor at that particular time when I was growing up. And, you know, he had a favorite saying about no blacks would walk through the hallways of the University of Alabama. And if you look at Alabama now with all of their sports and students, there are a number of black people who've helped to build the University of Alabama. So I was segregation brought up in it. Started out going to an all-black school. And the school, people couldn't believe the name of the school. It was Waukochee High School. And it was, and the logo was Indians, Waukochee High School. And that school still remains there today, but is desegregated now. And we would have to ride almost an hour to school on a bus. And so once I did that all the way up to the fifth grade, and trying to maneuver, get advanced to going to classes and going to school with whites. We still rode the bus with nothing but blacks on the bus going into an all-white school.
Hmm. How was that experience for you?
It was an experience, but I had become used to the experience because there was a young white boy who lived right up the street from us. He and I became good friends. His name was Ken, and so we played together every day, and so I wasn't afraid when I went to an all-white school. I just had to do better than they had to do. Mm. And I had to prove myself that I knew how to read, I knew how to write, I knew how to do math, and I could hold my own.
Young men of color in this day and age always saying that the times are tough, things are difficult, but not in comparison.
Well, they didn't live in the day that I live. You know, I just think that it is important that we understand our surroundings as black people and the culture in which we live in. There is nothing that we cannot do. We are the creator of America. There would be no America without black people.
So you could then go on to high school?
So I go to junior high school.
Okay.
I played football from junior high school all the way to senior high school. I was a pretty good football player. I got a scholarship playing football. That's how I got to college. Because my parents, you know, wanted me to go to college, but did not have all of the finance. And so I was able to get a scholarship to Johnson C. Smith University in Charlotte, North Carolina. And loved playing football. That got me through college. But even before I went to college, I was a preacher. I started preaching at age 15 at our local church. And had I was called to a church at age 16, a two-Sunday church in Alabama. And so I've enjoyed where I am. I've had a pretty decent life. The Lord has blessed me tremendously.
Now, by two Sunday church, that means?
Oh, good. I was there on the first and the third Sunday.
Okay.
And then I was preaching on the second and fourth Sunday other places.
Okay. So early on, you've already been tapped. Who discovered this gift of yours and encouraged it?
So my pastor encouraged me, but this gift came from God. You know, in my conversation with him and my seeking God for my life and for my future.
A lot of memorization of the Bible, a lot of reading, Lonely nights.
A lot of reading, a lot of understanding, the scripture, going to college, going to seminary. And so I went to Johnson C. Smith, which is in Charlotte, North Carolina, pastored a church in Catawba, North Carolina, and then Burlington, North Carolina, and going to school at the same time. So I went to, when I came here, I graduated from Hartford Seminary with a master's in religious education. I graduated from Yale Divinity School with a master's in sacred theology. And then I graduated from United Theological Seminary in Dayton, Ohio, with a doctorate of ministry. So it was about preparation. I was influenced by some older pastors who had prepared themselves for the work of the kingdom. I was influenced by the civil rights movement. Never had an opportunity to sit and talk with Dr. King, but his writings and his speeches influenced my life, along with Dr. Ralph Abernathy and Y.T. Walker and Hosea Williams and Martin III and Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and others influenced my life in reference to the church, to the pulpit, and to the streets.
Different levels.
Yep.
Different levels. You've taken all these steps, but you have a background. I mean, anyone can pastor a church, but it's how important is it to have that foundation? And all the question is, being maybe the only man of color in a lot of these rooms, man, well, let's just say being the only black man in the room in some of these places, how did you get over and how do you give yourself that sense of feeling that I belong here?
Well, I've always believed that doors would not be open unless you open them yourself. It is about communication. It is about the knowledge. It is about having the right attitude to sit and conversate with people who are in power. And so I've been given that gift. There is no door that I cannot get in based on the fact of understanding what's behind that door and understanding how to communicate with the people that are behind the desk when you go into their office. And so God gave me a gift to understand people. My mentor, Dr. Edwin Edmonds, who pastored the Dixwell Congregational Church, would always say that Boise Kimber has a way of talking to people and people understanding what he's talking about. And so even Dr. Cofield, who was one of my mentors also at Emmanuel Baptist Church, would always say the same thing. And I think it came from the fact that I grew up in the South and understood Mr. Arthur Smith. Mr. Arthur Smith ran everything in the little town where I was. He ran the doctor, he ran the sheriff department, he ran the local store, and then he had this place called a planer mill where people would cut wood and it would turn into sawdust to make paper. So understanding Mr. Arthur Smith gave me the right and the energy and the knowledge to go in and sit and talk to people.
There's a difference, there's a transition, and some people experience a culture shock when they come from the South to the North, especially in, I don't want to age you, but during your time. How was that transition for you, and how did you adapt so quickly?
Well, the transition was before the transition. I learned it in the South. I learned how to deal with people and to talk with people. And I learned from the civil rights movement how to deal with people, how to talk with people, and how to get in doors that the average person cannot and could not get in. And so it was It was like an art. It was like understanding those who were in power versus those who was trying to get power. Mm. And so you don't kill those who are in power, and you don't kill someone that you're trying to be like, and you're trying to get to where they are. You have the conversation. You talk. You continue to talk. You continue to have lunch. You continue to sit down and dialogue.
You are listening to 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario here. And you're listening to the words, and I love his accent, Dr. Boise, Reverend Dr. Boise Kimber, because the accent still comes through when you get really passionate.
Yes.
Something that you wear as a badge of honor, and you spend a lot of time traveling the country now. You've grown into a huge position of national leadership, but you still try to stay in, you stay in tune with the local leadership and the local politics and the local, how do you balance all that?
So I am the president of the Connecticut State Missionary Baptist Convention. That's my connection with the churches in this state. I've been president for 8 years, and then I just will finish up another 5 years this May. So I've been in the leadership position. I know what it means to be a leader and to bring people together. I would not have been a president of this august body that is 117 years old. And I've been one of the longest president because I have the attitude of gratitude of getting along with people and talking to people. And I don't win everybody, but I win enough to get elected. And so it's been important to me. For 40 years, I have strived to become a leader of the largest black denomination in the world, and that is the National Baptist Convention, USA Incorporated. I'm probably one of the youngest presidents that they've had. And this organization boasts some 7.2 million people around this country. And so I was elected as president September 5th, 2024. And so I have a five-year stint here to change the minds and the hearts, not only of our denomination, but people in which we do business with. Right now, what I'm doing is moving around the country every day, every other day, with speaking and meeting. We all know that the DEI is out here, so I have been meeting with corporate America. I was in Chicago the other day, meeting with the president of McDonald's, and then I was in Arkansas, I think it's Bentonville, Arkansas, and meeting with the president of Walmart. We are meeting with Fortune 500 people who are now denouncing DEI and coming to some conclusion and grip that you're going to have to talk to us. I'm not going to be the president of the largest black denomination out there, and you're not going to talk to me. Oh, you're going to talk to me. And you're going to talk to us in reference to how you are going to continue to deal with black America and with black folks on your staff and with black folks becoming entrepreneurs within your company. And so it's been going pretty decent. I have a meeting with American Airlines within the next couple of weeks in Dallas. Have a meeting with Chick-fil-A. Have a meeting with Delta Airline. Have a meeting with a number of other groups that my director of economic empowerment has made.
DEI, diversity, inclusion, equity. It's a lost thing on young people because they don't understand the significance of it. Unlike you, who grew up in a segregated South, who knows about how opportunities are afforded, can you just say something to the youth of the importance of making sure that Black folk have a seat at the table?
Listen, their mother, their grandmother, her mother, their grandfathers, other grandfathers, paved the way for DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And for them not to understand is a travesty to Black people and the work that Black folks have done to build America and to work in America. And for them to say, I don't care, that is an attitude. And I don't know where they got that attitude from. And I don't know how that attitude will help them to get to the next level. People fought for our rights. People died for our rights in Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana and Georgia and, you know, the cotton fields and the tobacco fields of North Carolina and South Carolina, the roots. And so for those who have the knowledge and understand that we did not get here on our own, somebody died that we might become presidents of companies, directors of companies, that we did not just get there by affirmative action. We got there because somebody paved the way. And for these young people who are talking and is not interested in the fact of how we grow, how we get to the next level, we got work to do. Mm-hmm. And parents have work to do. And our school system have work to do. And that is why I was given a chartered school for all boys. Fifth grade, because they are having a tough time reading, a tough time in math, and people are not looking at that. We got some of the worst scores in the inner city in this country, and this is why it was laid on my heart to start an all-boys school that we could help these young men and develop these young men. And we're hoping to open up this fall.
What's the name of the school?
The name of the school is Edmonds Cofield Preparatory Academy for Young Men. Named after Dr. E.R. Edmonds and Dr. C.M. Cofield. They were civil rights men. Dr. Edmonds grew up in Texas, and then Dr. Edmonds was an instructor, I think it was at Bennett School in North Carolina, and sit at the counter of Woolworth. And Dr. Cofield, North Carolina, Enfield, worked down there, school teacher. And so these are two men that we named the school after, because of their knowledge and because of what they had gone through, because of their education.
Very important in this day and age, because we already know that they want to dismantle the education system. So how important is it for a Black man to know his history so he can move forward?
It is important that we understand Black history. And I don't even know whether Black history is being taught in the New Haven public school system. But if it's not, then we who have gone through and understand Black history must teach and talk about Black history. I talk about Blackness every Sunday that I'm in town at my church and across the country because that's who I'm appealing to. I was elected by Black people, and I must communicate with them, with Black people, that we are the salt of the earth.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. You're listening to the inspiring prophetic words of Reverend Dr. Boise Kimber. We are getting near the end here. We talked about education, the importance of history. How important is it to not be ashamed of where you're from? Because a lot of people live in shame. This community is always being shamed for who they are.
Listen, I have not lived a perfect life, but I've been blessed. I've been blessed to have a great family, a loving wife, a very beautiful young lady, wife who has helped me on this journey. And, I've been kicked around. I've been criticized for stances in which I've taken in this city, across the state. Many know my name but don't know me. I have spent my life fighting for people. And now God has given me the largest platform that any Black man or any Black preacher would ever want. It's the leading the National Baptist Convention, USA Incorporated. And so I've been given this platform. And even before giving the platform, I was destined to be the leader because I worked, I understood, and I was disciplined. And to come from the smallest state, Connecticut, and to come from the smallest church, Connecticut, I won the election. For men who came larger churches than I had, bigger cities. And I came to the presidency of the National Baptist Convention without women being involved. Now I name the first woman to the executive committee of the National Baptist Convention. I name almost 10 women to the board of directors. I named women to be the assistant general secretary of the National Baptist Convention. I have been able to put women all across the National Baptist Convention, 145-year-old organization, just now receiving women as a part of our denominational leadership. That's the broad mind. That my plans were before I got there. We got to lower this glass ceiling for women to be a part of our denomination and our churches.
Why take such a risk? I mean, why is it in you to take challenge, to meet a challenge up front, to see where the lack is and to stand up for you, for justice?
I knew what I needed to do. And I knew that if I didn't do it, I wouldn't survive. I did it, and I'm one of the most popular presidents now and over the last 4 months by opening those doors and by giving people, young pastors, an opportunity to serve. I watched it. I watched people. And I knew that if I didn't do it, I would be just like them, the former presidents.
Leaving a legacy. A legacy is very important to you. Your father left the legacy behind. He showed you how to leave legacy. How important is you to teach young Black men about legacy?
I want to leave a legacy of togetherness, a legacy of working together, a legacy of standing up for what you believe in, a legacy of education, that we've got to have education in order to get to these tables. The first thing they Google, who are you? Where did you go to school at? What are you doing now? I can't get into the doors of corporate America without understanding the business of corporate America and without having any background, without having any education or knowledge. And so to young men and women, there are no jobs in New Haven. You got to go to college. You got to leave New Haven and go to college. And I guarantee you, 90% of them who leave New Haven and go to college doesn't come back home. Because what am I coming back to? I've stayed away for 4 years. I've made contact. And so that's how you build your career, by making contact with others who are able to help you and to open doors for you.
Mm. Don't be afraid to step out of the city. People always think, you know, they always think that they're home, and they don't understand the Jesus syndrome, even Jesus.
Oh, yeah. You're talking like you know a little something here.
Even Jesus had to leave home to get recognized, right?
I mean, if you're going to make it, I left home, man, at 18 going to college and never went back home to live again, but stayed in contact with home and still in contact with cousins and a couple of my aunties. So you gotta stretch out and you gotta believe in yourself.
That's the thing in our community, though, because as soon as you want to do something different, you're selling out, you know, you think you're better than someone. These are negative things that take place in our culture. How do you dispel that?
Well, the way I dispel it is to continue to fight the good fight of faith. You're just not going to tell me no and not give me the real adjective of why you telling me no. I mean, you got to have a reason. And most time people don't have a reason for saying no. And so you got to challenge those who tell you you can't do it. And so that's been my life, challenging individuals who look at me and tell me to go home. You can't do this. They told me you wouldn't. They said to me, you would never be president of the National Baptist Convention, Boise. And I never would open my mouth. I would smile because I understood what I needed to do to get to where I am today. And it still hadn't hit me right that I'm the leader of the largest black denomination. And like right now, wherever I go, I have security. I don't need no security. They said, oh, yes, you do. Instead of the way you talk and what you say, somebody is listening and somebody is watching. And so I just want to, as Dr. King said, and I'm not Dr. King, but man, he's one of my idols, you know, that do your best while you can and stand up for what you believe in. And I never understood why Dr. King would talk about the nonviolence. And I understand that. You don't have to be violent with people. All you got to do is be able to articulate what they don't understand, but you understand it. And so black people got to articulate where we are. We ain't got to fuss or fight. I was with the governor of Illinois. I think it was last week I was in Springfield, Illinois. And so when I'm going to these places to speak, I have my people on the other end set up meetings with legislators. Because legislators make laws. And when I talk to them and talk to lieutenant governors and governors, even had a meeting with Governor Mott the other week, I'm talking about education. How are we going to educate these kids? I'm talking about affordable housing. I'm talking about jobs. I'm talking about climate changes. I'm talking about money. Let's talk about money. Let's talk about how black folks going to benefit. Let's talk about, do we ever see any black people on 91 and 95 doing construction? We got to talk about the real issues that are going to lift black people, but black people got to be able to lift themselves and accept the challenge, because it's always going to be a challenge.
You are listening to The Electric Drum, 94.3 WYBC. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Reverend Dr. Boise Kimber, in case you don't recognize the voice or the man. Final words before we go to your constituents and follow in the flock out there.
Well, I think that New Haven, black people in New Haven, has got to come to grips. Where are we today? What are we doing? What are our challenges? It ain't enough for one black person to make it. We got to be able to bring a train along with us. And so I submit today that we got much work to do. And we must rise above the jealousy and rise above what the goals others have made versus the goals that you've made. The challenge is ours in New Haven. And black people got to stand up. I am so disappointed in the fact that Bill Dyson was a state representative of the 94th District for over 30 years. And then Robin came along and gave it up. And now in the 94th District, we have a white state rep in a black district sleeping at a time when we should be awakened. And so the alarm is going off. It's a matter of whether or not we're hearing the alarm. And people are talking about, you know, talking about Trump is going to do this, Trump is going to do that. Listen, we have the Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, right here in the state of Connecticut. And nobody has said one word. I'm looking forward to meeting with her.
I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This has been The Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City, and we just heard the inspiring story. Thank you for sharing, of Reverend Dr. Boise Kimber.
Thank you so very much for having me.
And to everyone out there listening, well, thank you for listening.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.